Society 13 Podcast Network. Redefining podcasts. Society-13.com.
I like to listen.
This is my music box. Can you hear the music? It plays for you. The music is calling for you to make a choice. My building has 9 floors, and each leads to a very different place. My lift can go places you'd never expect, and it's waiting for you. Come along and take a ride on the lift. Find the lift at victoriaslift.com and also in iTunes at itunes.victoriaslift.com.
Six savage seasons all in a row. Six scary seasons for the beast to grow. Six wicked seasons to keep you up all night. Six nasty reasons for your wicked delight. Six wicked seasons that you thought was scary. Wait till season 7 of The Wicked Library. September 2016. Visit thewickedlibrary.com. From Society 13, Redefining Podcasts.
Welcome to Channel 9 of the STRY Radio Network, where stories live.
Before you listen to this podcast, be aware this show often uses very naughty language. If you don't like that, you shouldn't listen. Send your complaints to I Am a Whiny Baby with No Sense of Humor at nightstory.com or stop by the studio. I'll take you for a ride to a story of my choosing.
Well, you know, the last episode we talked about my pee fetish, so, you know, we're off to a roll here.
That is great. Okay, so now I'm just excited. Now I'm just like super, super excited.
So here's the deal. Jeanette was doing a review of a zombie book, and one of the sentences that she used had 5 words to it. There was so much pee. Because the author just talks about all the peeing that goes on. Like every time they find a zombie, they pee. Every time they go into the woods, they pee.
It was like a really essential part of her storytelling was, you know, the fact that every time someone turned into a zombie, you knew because they peed.
They lost control.
I was
of their
actually
bladder.
Really surprised that there wasn't like pooping involved too, because realistically,
right. They should shit themselves.
If your body's
too.
Losing, they would shit themselves too. Like that would just make more sense.
Right, but pee's okay. But we don't talk about scat fetishes. That's yeah. just still
no. That's too far.
That's
that is too
still
far.
Not a thing.
And when we're saying, you know, it's all about what so you're into. Pee. Like if you're into splatterpunk, which this was, I was like, you know,
okay.
So if you're into,
okay.
So if you're into so, pee, you know, like. Well, maybe I. Well, no, I'm not in. Well, maybe I am, listeners. You know,
right,
it's my secret.
Right.
It's my secret.
I did not know that about myself.
Maybe I am.
One of the best things I read an article one time. It was a porn star who he was bisexual. He did both kinds of porn, but his like specialty fun porn was like him taking it from girls wearing strap-ons. So that was his like du jour porn, and he wrote this fucking hilarious article on just like behind the scenes with shooting porns. And one of the things was like you discover weird fetishes about yourself, and there was one he was describing when I found the porn and I watched it, by the way. He was Robin and there was a girl dressed up like Harley Quinn with a strap on,
so he was into pegging. Yeah.
In the next scene, the director's like, well, we need something different. And so the girl playing Harley was like, well, I'm already wearing clown makeup. So, and then he's like, guess who's into clown porn now?
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. I'm worried that I know that that's called pegging. That tells you a little bit too much.
It's okay.
This is what happens whenever you spend too much time around Dick Dangle.
It's okay. I'm a huge fan of Tumblr. I get a lot of most of my porn through Tumblr because that's what Tumblr's made for. Anyone that's just using it as like an actual blog is just lying. They're just using it to go watch porn GIFs. I mean, really, that's all it's good for.
See, I did not know that until I saw yours. Wait a minute.
That's
what did I
great
just say?
Because mine's all art, but there's a world. I can show you the world, Dan, of like anything you want. It's
you're like a twisted porn Willy Wonka.
The schnozsticks taste like schnozsticks.
The dildos taste like, well, we don't talk about what the dildos taste like.
That. Probably Astroglide and ass, but we don't go there.
Why do we have her on every week, Jeanette?
No, we should.
Right.
Because all I talk about is Astroglide and ass. That's probably
pegging and clown porn. You know, it's a good time.
And clown porn.
That's right.
It's a pretty broad range there, actually.
Runs the gamut.
Hey Siri, what do you love?
I love clown porn.
Okay, so yeah. I guess we should get started, right? We're all warmed up now, right?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Fantastic. So welcome to the Night Story Podcast, episode number, I don't know, I don't keep track anymore, Jeanette. What episode
digits,
is this, 413?
Digits.
Might be 13.
I have no idea.
14, 13, be. 15. I know it's not episode number one, so.
No. Nope.
We've been doing this more than once.
Episode after the last one. That's right. You're welcome.
Welcome. Insert episode number here. Welcome to
episode number 413.
And there we go.
Blur.
So today, perfect. Jeanette and I have two guests. Well, we have a guest.
Two.
Yeah, I know. But Cindy's kind of creeping right now. She's not actually. She's on mute. I like to listen.
Because I don't have my good microphone set up.
Oh, that's all right.
You sound okay.
You sound fantastic.
Yeah, right.
So we have
make crashing noises.
It's okay. There's motorcycles all throughout the background of my audio because we had a legit motorcycle convention on Main Street today, and they are just now leaving.
Was there a police officer, a construction worker, and an Indian by chance?
Oh my God, please say yes.
Not that I saw. Unfortunately.
So here's the thing. I was watching TV today or earlier, and there was a commercial and somebody's riding their motorcycle with a disco ball. I think it's a commercial for Let Go, but the Village People were in it. It was fucking awesome.
Like the real, like
was real it the games. Real ones?
I believe so. I actually had to go to Wikipedia and find out if they were like still active. And I guess they are, there is a version of the, like some of the people were passed away and not part of the group anymore, but it's apparently the current incarnation of the Village People.
Well, good for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they did the whole dance at the end, you know, all of
they're
them
due
came
for
out.
A comeback, I think.
I think so.
I think so.
I think so.
I back that.
So I mean, we
every
have
dance ever still puts their song. So
totally. I was actually just listening to their fucking In the Navy album just the other night because there's some nights where I need to listen to disco and
all the time like every night.
When am this, I not? Yeah.
This episode is going to be totally disco, everybody. Why do you think I wrote a 70s episode of The Lift?
I have that song on 45.
Nice.
45s are plastic records, kids. They have grooves in them.
What's a record?
Bob,
it's like a really big CD, right?
Right.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, what's a CD? It's the thing that you used to rip all of your songs off of to put on your iPod.
Yeah, it's how we made MP3s back in the old days. Back when I was a kid, we used to rip things off a CD and make MP3s out of them.
Now you can just download everything.
That's right. Just like porn. But who downloads porn anymore, really? I mean, you just watch it online, right?
Or you have a whole folder titled porn, and it's in your videos section because there's just some gems you don't want to see go away.
Right, exactly. It's inspiring. When you're doing art, you want to look over and see porn playing.
I do have to say, yes.
Fantastic. See?
Quite a bit.
So we have Alex Murd, who is a fantastic artiste and has done work for
Stunning.
The Wicked Library, The Lift, and tons of other really cool stuff, but maybe listeners of this show would know you from those two places.
Yeah.
And my partner for The Lift, Cynthia Lohman, also Cynthia Nespiazinski. Nespiazinski. I know how to say Nespiazinski. I've struggled with that for years, though. Have you seen this name? Niespodzianski. I can now spell it.
How can you miss that?
How can you mispronounce it? Very easily. It's just intimidating.
No, no, it's seeing it.
Oh, it's like watching somebody walk out into traffic. You're like, wait, no, I'm really uncomfortable now. What do I do with this? I'm going to try to say this and it's going to go terribly, terribly wrong.
So Dan's the reason why you got a pen name then, yeah?
No. It's she just too long and awkward to spell.
Yeah.
And people won't be able to find a website or anything. So it's a great name. It means surprise in Polish. So it's really awesome. And I was quoted in the Post-Gazette as Candy. So instead of the old porn names that you always like used your street name or whatever, I just go with Candy Surprise.
Wow. I did not know that. That's fine. I knew about the candy thing. What I knew the candy thing, but I didn't know the candy surprise. I didn't make the connection. Long time listener, first time caller.
Well, that's clearly Polish. My mom's maiden name super Polish. She's Minkowski, yeah. And don't even get me started on spilling that. And it's funny because my Murd is another euphemism for big mouth in German. So there's that.
That's funny.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So tonight, I guess we're going to talk a little bit about art and other things. Jeanette, did you have questions? Because
I have lots of questions.
Fantastic.
Always. None pre-written, just things that I want to ask her.
Okay. Although, go for it.
Thankfully, Alex and I have sort of started this conversation a while ago because I like just randomly talking to artists that I admire and asking them lots of questions. And Alex, you were one of them. I was like, hey, you mind if I pick your brain for a minute?
And that goes back to if you're friends with somebody, that's what private messaging's for.
See, this is the cool thing about doing this is these little communities. Like, I didn't know. I figured you guys probably corresponded a little bit, but I didn't realize there was like a whole dialogue going on. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Dialogue, yeah.
Well, a little bit. Although what I had been asking you at the time was more how financially / business wise you're running your art.
Yeah.
Because that's a thing I'm still trying to figure out. But on this podcast, I would actually like to hear more about the art you create and the things that motivate you. Obviously, porn is part of it.
Yes,
porn. But
moving on, like that's old hat, apparently.
I think it's fascinating. We'll talk about that more next week on Dangling After Dark with Dick Dangle.
And out.
There you go.
I would say the inspirations for the artwork I do, print work and comic work together, biggest thing is music. And after I sit down and write a story or think of something or get in the mood listening to music, to summarize it, I would say Art Deco, old silent movies, fashion photography, and retro porn photography. So.
Nice.
Main ones. Right there.
So what appeals to you about the Art Deco thing?
When I was younger, my mom and dad really liked watching older movies. So I grew up watching a lot of movies from the 30s,
nice.
20s, and the 40s. And just seeing, she would bring home books from the library about interior decorating and art deco. And just seeing, I really connected with the art style when I asked what kind of art this was. And I saw, she's like, it's like art deco is all artwork done. And from the 10s maybe through the 30s kind of.
Mm-hmm.
And it just really connected with the line work. And the graphic, the two-dimensional, the graphicness of it.
Oh, yeah. The lines were fantastic in that style.
back when everybody talked like this. Hello, how you doing there, friends? Come on in, let's take off our hats.
Please, we're through a megaphone. Can we just all go there? Let's make that happen. I would say my number one inspiration, though, for artwork has been music. I actually get more out of just sitting down and listening to an album for a while or some songs that really speak to me. If I get like in the mood to do like a high energy piece or if it's a comic, I always use mood music to back a comic to get ideas for like to see what comes in my mind's eye for dialogue and story. But I would definitely say it would actually be music above any two-dimensional artwork.
Nice.
Do you have any specific musicians or genres that you like continually go back to?
How long is this podcast going to be?
Longer than Cindy wants it to be. She makes fun of me whenever I have long episodes. That's all. That's an inside joke. That's nothing to do with you. That's all me. Like whenever I used to do 2-hour episodes, she's like, "That's just too much. I can't deal with it."
Right. My short attention span can't handle that.
Nobody's can. I can't handle 2-hour podcasts anymore.
Music. Again, I was lucky. I listened to so much stuff. I mean, so favorite things I probably come back to would be, I usually like really high energy music in any kind of form, whether it be, you know, any kind of rock or fun, even, you know, like a disco or club music or even shitty pop music that I like that I only listen to in my headphones when I need a day where I just need to listen to Lady Gaga all day while I'm working on something.
That way no one can make fun of you like they do that poor girl that likes Bedazzling.
You know, you can't, because I'll totally own up to it. Like, you fucking like Lana Del Rey? And it's like, yeah, motherfucker, I do.
That's awesome.
She is queen, but Lana is bae. But I would say high energy. I grew up on a lot of rock and roll. My parents were totally rockers. And so one of my all-time favorite bands is like AC/DC. Will always be one of my favorite bands. I like a lot of pretty much I'm just a fan of rock in all of its forms, I would say. From everything from like Delta blues to like modern rock now, certain things. So just the whole spectrum of rock and roll. It's always welcome on my playlist.
Is that the same for you, Jeanette? Whenever you're doing art, I mean, do you listen to a lot of music as well, or?
I go through bizarre modes where I will either binge listen to music, or I will binge listen to podcasts, or all I can deal with silence. Like, sometimes all I can handle is the sound of silence. I still haven't figured out which ones actually require certain needs.
Simon and Garfunkel. That's great. You just put that on loop and just listen to it over and over again.
No shit. That was one of my, I wrote a comic to that. So
nice. Seriously.
Seriously, it opens with come on, what's their big one? Come on, Hello Darkness. What's that song? Sound of Silence.
Sound of Silence.
Darkness.
Yeah.
Sound of Silence.
And yeah. The end of the comic ended up wrapping up, because by the time the end of the comic was wrapping up writing it, one of my characters was singing Mrs. Robinson. So
nice.
Oh, that's awesome.
Can work wonders.
Was everything gray?
Not.
Or was it all brown?
Right. Probably shades of burst, really. Maybe some ochre, gunmetal.
Oh, some happy little tree. You got a burnt ochre.
Yes.
He used ochre. He used a lot of yellow ochre and burnt. Was it burnt umber?
Burnt umber, or was it burnt sienna?
Burnt sienna. Maybe that was it.
Is it burnt sienna? And like, yeah, the yellow ochre. I mean, I think that was his favorite.
Everything had yellow ochre in it. I know that. Yeah, Disturbed's version of Sound of Silence is fantastic if you haven't heard it.
I have, actually, which is kind of bizarro land, really. It was really great, but, you know, it's one of those things when you hear, like, a band cover something that's totally not them, but it sounds cool, and you're like, holy shit. It's like Korn did a cover of Psychedelic Furs, their big hit.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah, because I've heard it. That's
yeah, it's their big single, but... And I haven't found a good copy, but the only copy available online is like, it's skipped. But I was hearing this, like, what is this? This is amazing. So,
Love My Way, right?
Thank you. Yes. Yeah. Yes. That's the one. But it's fantastic. If you can hear the snippets of it and not cringe at the skipping on it. But it was just mind blowing. I'm a sucker for a good cover.
Nice. You had another question,
Jenna. Speaking of covers,
Go for it. Let's get under that.
I'm all excited now. Oh, okay.
I wanted to know a little bit more about Crazed Pixel. For people who don't know what it is, can you talk a little bit about your Crazed Pixel project?
Yes. I would say Crazed Pixel Comics is the umbrella term for my partner and I's comic work. So that's just our little independent label title that we started using to just kind of use as a house for any of our creative endeavors that we could slap on there. And slap on our comics, or if we're just doing print work, or, you know, just to say, like, what we're from. It's just ours. It's just the two of us. And it's just for any and everything that we want to do artistically. It just kind of goes through, like, that umbrella, that head. So.
Nice. What's one of the pieces that you've made for Crazed Pixels that you've been the most proud of? I know that's a hard
it's kind of hard. Like my babies, all my babies.
they're all my babies.
Most proud of, I would say personally, for a hard project that I usually work better in short formats. I found out I work better with comics that are anywhere from 6 to 12 pages. Anything beyond that, I start turning it into fucking Homer's Odyssey or some shit. So. I would say, I think one of the things I'm most proud of is I did a comic. I have a comic series that's very irreverent and you don't have to read them in order, called Cinder, that's on the site. Mm-hmm. And one of the comics was called Comfort Zone, from Cinder. And that was 40 pages. So that was pretty much like doing a Bible for me. So I think that's one I'm most proud of, just for the amount of work that had to go into it. And it was hand lettered by my partner, James. He helped design the pages and actually do the hand lettering. So I think that was a huge accomplishment that we did. I mean, that was a couple years ago now, but I think that one, I'm still just like, it was a lot of work and it was totally worth it, but it was excruciating for me.
Yeah. 40 pages.
It was intense. It's one of those things too, where you write up a script and like, I see this being maybe like, you know, 10 pages. Oh, maybe it's 20. And then when it got to 40, James was like, stop. We need to wrap this shit up. You know what? Stop. I think you're right.
So when you're working on a project that has like that many pages, do you ever find that it's difficult to keep your style consistent all the way through?
I would say yes and no. For me, I guess, I suppose it depends on the project. Some are easier to keep in tune. Some of my styles change with whatever project I'm working on, whether it's more cartoony or if it's more scratchy or raw, or if it's more just somewhere in the middle, I guess. For me, it depends on the project. Some things are easier, like keeping with the cartooning.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, actually, it can be easier, but for me, sometimes it can be more difficult if I draw something that looks too real, you know, and then you have to extrapolate it, make it look cartoony. But I would say it goes in like a roller coaster, kind of. Sometimes it gets hard, and then it levels out again, and then sometimes it's kind of hard, and then it levels out again. But I think that's difficult for any sequential artist, just making sure that everything feels the same throughout a whole piece. For any artist, for a sequential artist, it's always a challenge to make sure that your first page and your last page kind of sort of look similar. Like they belong in the same book.
Yeah. I have a massive issue with that personally. That's why I ask. Have you found any tricks that have kind of helped you keep it consistent all the way through?
I have. It's drawing your characters constantly. It's drawing them just in one-offs and pieces, conceptualizing them, drawing them in different outfits. At least for me, that works. But I found just drawing them consistently. To me, backgrounds are an afterthought. I just don't fucking care, which is probably why some suck. And it's like all about the figure work up front. But I would say just drawing the characters so much and really getting a good feel with the characters and what they look like and memorizing the lines of their face like a map. Helps me a lot. Keep everything looking consistent.
That makes so much sense. And I can really see that with your work too, actually, because your characters totally, like, they just capture your eye when you look at a page of your comics. Like, I see the eyes, I see the expression, I see the movement of the characters before I even register anything else.
then you know, Alex Hughes characterized, it's super effective. Yay. awesome. I mean, thank you. That's definitely, I'm way more of a figure artist first. I mean, that's one of the things I know, like, I need to, it's a fun challenge for me to work on figure ground relations. And actually, when I'm thinking of panels and characters interacting with background objects, that's always a challenge for me. But I definitely can say I'm a figure artist first, and I love drawing people and faces and figures. So I'm glad that comes through, because in my head, they're a bunch of wackos. So I just hope that translates to what's, you know, being drawn on the page, so they don't look stagnant, because, you know, they're insane.
yeah, it definitely comes through. So you also write your stories, correct?
Yes.
What was your most challenging story to write?
It's hard to say, as some stories are very inspired by just what I'm thinking at the time, or I like to just let my characters play out movies in my head and just kind of see what they're doing. I usually just try to get inspiration for what a scene's doing or what the characters want to do, and I just try to watch what they want to do sometimes instead of placing them places. Or I'm never very A to B when it comes to story writing, which is why I also have difficulty finishing stories sometimes. But I mostly just like slice of life irreverency.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, but after you have a nice foundation for that, it can be kind of challenging to actually fit in the dialogue you would like your characters to say in that little just slice of life irreverent fun scene. So when it comes to writing a full comic, one of the most difficult ones I had writing was either Comfort Zone. I can go back to that one just because it was so enormous. It's very wordy. And recently in one of my little black books, one of my porn books, it concludes with a little 7 or 8 page story with a couple of my characters. And that one, actually, I drew the scene first and decided to make dialogue after. So that was kind of a challenge for me to be like, okay, there's this entire scene of these two guys fucking, but what are they talking about? So that one was actually a challenge.
Did you remember to pick up the dry cleaning today?
Right.
I sure did. Let's have chicken for dinner.
Right. Like, you know, oh, do you want to watch Law and Order after this?
Just like the most mundane thing possible, right?
Exactly. I think it's fun for me. I like the short ones because I always try to slip in like a cute little moral or something. I've noticed that I can be very cheeky and very saccharine sometimes, but I usually always like to bring things around to something kind of positive or uplifting in those weird moments. If you can dig that in a porn book. But so that was a good challenge. And sometimes wrapping up, it's just among you guys, among who I'm talking to, all of you guys. I mean, you guys all write short stories. You know how fucking difficult that is to write a short story, to try to have everything in a package. And standing alone by itself, but not diving too deep and seeing what you can cut out. You don't need to explain this, this, and this, but you need to elaborate on this. I mean, it's difficult to do shorts. It can be really difficult to do shorts of anything, I think.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things I can say about your artwork is, to me, it feels like all your characters are very comfortable with who they are. And some of them are, there's some darkness to it, obviously, as well. And they're comfortable embracing that as part of who they are, which I find really compelling and interesting.
Well, thank you. Another thing that I'm glad that shines through, because I try to, you know, be that way myself with, you know, being honest, being honest to me. I gotta like me first.
Right.
So I'm glad that comes through. I think also because I have a lot of confidence in them. I think like any creator, when it comes to any creator creating characters in any form, there's a little bit of you in these characters in some aspect of mostly any character you create. And it's fun to have your different roles and your different roles you play in life, and maybe to make characters that are different parts of different facets of yourself. And so I'm glad that comes through because I have a lot of confidence in them. To me, they're real fucking people in my head. Best friend of mine that lives back out east and I still talk. We're like, hey, how's Johnny and Jay doing? Like they're still fucking people. We just go on for hours talking about like the stories and like different adventures they were going on. And we would just make one up on the fucking phone while we're role playing it out. And so like, they are pretty much real people in my head. And so I'm glad that comes through because I have a lot of confidence in them as being really solid and just these kind of living, you know, breathe life into them kind of things. So I'm glad that comes through. because they're real to me. So hopefully they're a little bit real to other people. That would be, that's just a bonus.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's something that, you know, someone that isn't creating or writing probably doesn't get is how real these characters become to us. I mean, like Victoria is in the next room. I mean, she's as real as anybody else that I'm talking to.
God. Right. You know, they're a part of you, and mm-hmm. you know, I don't care how artsy fartsy I sound, but you know, they're a part of you. They're your other personalities. They're there. You know, you're just like, and writing scenes. You know, you can get very emotional. Mm-hmm. You're feeling what mm-hmm. your character's feeling when or you're just thinking of their backstory, or you know, you're just doing something like that, and you actually get so attached to, and you can feel these things that they're going through, or you understand how challenging they are. And some days they're fucking assholes, and some days they're candy. You know, and you're just like, why are you being a dick today? But they're multifaceted, but they're there, yeah, and you can really feel what they feel. So sometimes, yeah, you know, you're writing something and you're like, oh, it's like watching a movie, you know, you're like, oh, it connects so much with this, and feels like, you know, your kid or something.
Yeah, I mean, the joy of when they say something that you're not expecting them, or they do something you're not expecting them to do. You're like, wait a minute, no, you're not supposed to do you. And they tell you too, whenever it's like you try to put words in their mouth, that does not sound like me.
Exactly. No, totally. You know, I'm like, fuck you, I'm not saying that. Or they don't want to play nice for a day. Right. And you know, like, you're just like, fine, you know. It's funny how mine have come back around. One of my characters, it's funny how it comes back around. Is like, you know, create a character out of this, comes out of my head, and I realize that this character I created is kind of like an aspiring, mature character, you know, something to aspire to in his maturity level and in his prowess and his intelligence and his compassion. And so, you know, he's just like, to me, an epitome of like, just an awesome person. So it's funny how creating that, and I use that sometimes still, where it's like, instead of WWJD, it's WWRD, what would Rick do? And I use that sometimes when I need to psych myself up, when I really need to be a boss for a day. And so it's just funny how like, that comes back around when you're just like thinking about your own characters for your inner strength.
Well, it makes sense. If it's a little slice of you, you know, you have it in you to be that person in a lot of ways. So you can be like, all right, I got to tap into my inner bitch today or whatever.
It's a lot of, you know, and then it also goes with fake it till you make it.
Yes.
Cindy, you've never had any experience with a character not wanting to let you tell their story, have you?
Oh, please. That most recent story that came out, how about that one?
Yeah, you know what? Why don't you talk about that? Because that's kind of on topic. What happened whenever you were trying to write Plummet, Victoria's story?
Well, this is a short story. She wouldn't talk to me. I worked for days and days. I almost slept with my statue of her. Like, please tell me your story. Yeah, she was very stubborn. She even gave Amber laryngitis.
She did.
Dang.
Yeah, Cindy finally finished the story. And then right after that, Amber Collins, who voices Victoria, she had laryngitis for like 2.5 weeks. And she just got enough of her voice back to actually record that and part of she was recording both at the same time. So she recorded Plummet in a studio that a friend of hers gave her access to. So she recorded that in like an actual recording studio. And then she recorded part of this for my story, the storm on her own. And then she had to do pickup lines. So her voice was different all three times. And it was, I felt so bad for her.
Yeah.
She did such a good job though. Like how that episode came together just broke me. I don't know how you guys reacted to it. It was so sad.
Oh, I did a lot of crying while I was writing that.
The mark of a good creator, like, you know, you got to cry a lot.
Yeah. Yes.
And, you know, I mean, I've heard that thing probably at least 15 or 20 times because of editing and putting things together and going back and fixing this, that, and the other thing. And I cry every time I listen to it. So, it intensifies at each level. So you have, you know, you have the story by itself, which is emotional. Mm-hmm. And then you start to put together the dialogue and everything, and it becomes emotional at that point. And then you're fine tuning the audio, and then you add the score onto, like when you add the score, for me, that's like the big thing, is like it all comes together at that point. And then I pepper in, you know, the sound effects afterwards. Because sometimes you don't need it, because the music carries that scene.
Just like watching a movie. I mean, music is so powerful.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It makes it so much easier. I mean, one of the storytellers that, like actual live storytellers that I really admire, his name's Daniel Morden. And he's a traditional storyteller, goes all over the world and makes his living telling stories. And he has a side project where he works with musicians. And he's like, you know, it's so much easier when I'm working with the musicians because I don't have to work as hard. The music carries the emotion. I don't have to work as hard to get someone to feel sad for that character because the music does it. And I feel art's that way a lot. You know, like the cover images, that's why I think they're so important because they kind of give you, they put you in the right mindset to listen to that story. You know, like,
yeah, absolutely.
It gives you that. Well, you know, you're both visual artists. I'm preaching to the choir.
Well, I'm thinking about that, the cover you did with the gun and Victoria, and it just like, it was so, it was colorful and bold, and yet just, it was a powerful image. Like, Dan showed me the sketch version of it. Sorry. I was like, damn, that's going to be great. And then it turned out the way it did. I was like, I had no idea it was going to be that amazing.
And that one I got to thank you guys for too, because that was a fun, I know Dan, you and I had some really great back and forth on that. Some really good, like collaborative, collaboration, like, well, how about this? And we were really like trying out a bunch of different stuff and just going back and forth with that. And that was great. You know, I feel like we've really bonded.
You really pushed me out of my comfort zone on that one because my first reaction was, wow, how are people going to react to this?
Yeah.
it would be silly if we don't. I mean, this happened right around the time of the Orlando shootings. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, it had a huge impact on me. I know, Alex, you said it had a huge impact on you. I'm sure most of us, it had a big impact on us. And it was just like, is it okay to do that? And we finally got to that point where, you know, in collaborating and talking, I mean, I talked to Cindy a lot about it too. And just in working through that, it was like, okay, yes, I think this is the image that conveys the emotion that it needs to.
I from reading that tale, that's why my devil's advocateness is when I was reading that tale, I'm like, that guy is such a bastard. Like, he's the worst person. He's the worst kind of person. And it is just funny how one can write words and you can read words to create the image in your head. But as soon as someone draws it, it's that much more like, you know, someone can put pen to paper and care for that much of a piece of shit of a character. Mm-hmm. But the minute you draw something like that, it can, you know, it's instantly catapulted into like, whoa, wait a minute.
Yeah, it's that image image and music are just so visceral because we're very visual and auditory creatures. You know, I mean, it's...
Yeah, we are.
Before anything else, I mean, you know, that's what it was, is sound and sight. And I think that's... Mm-hmm. They just go very deep into us. And I work very hard as a writer to try to get what's in my head out into words. And if it's done right, it carries a lot of weight and power, but I'm smart enough to know that it's never going to carry the same power that music or art is. Visual art. Yeah, I mean, art, right?
Yeah, it's all,
it is all art.
It is all art. It's totally all art. It's an interesting thing. It goes along with some, my view on shock art, because I was really happy to do that cover. I'm very glad you guys liked it because I was trying to keep it done well. But to me, and because we talked about a couple of different ideas for that, like the garrote wire, and to just kind of like keep it a little bit more subdued, but still have a very foreboding kind of feeling to it. I can say I'm pleased the image grew on you, that we could use that one and go with it. And I felt like the colors would just keep it that much more abstract, to just do that kind of coloring work on it instead of trying to color it real or do like a realistic pencil shading. That just didn't seem appropriate. But when it comes to shock art like that, it's like, I'm an advocate for shock art, but let's face it, you know, we're all adults and you can smell bullshit. You know when somebody's just doing something to be outrageous and titillating compared to when shock art's actually being used to actually try to convey some kind of message. And when I was in college, we had this really, really awesome class called Creativity. And it was just about exploring your own creativity in any field. You want it to be in medical or literary or teaching or whatever. And it was great. And you're just exploring your own creative process. And we read this book, it was written by a photographer. And he had a whole section on artists should be using their art socially and responsibly. And that's fair. That's fair. His example for that was he went to a showing of photographs that was photographs of women being like pushed down and simulated rape scenarios of these photographs. Mm-hmm. So it was very violent, like shoving of women down, and the point of view was the camera over top of them. And he kind of trashed it. Whereas I had a rebuttal to that in mind. I was like, I disagree, because if I went to that kind of art show, I would be obviously shocked and appalled. And, you know, you really connect with that and see, like, this is horrible, but it's not sweeping things under the rug. I like shock art for the fact that it brings stuff to the surface in a very harsh manner.
And it's also kind of a safe environment, because we know it's art. We know that there's a layer between it. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about story and storytelling, is it gives you an opportunity to deal with some very weighty, very heavy topics in an environment. It's like riding a roller coaster, kind of. It's, you know, you're safe and you're not in immediate danger. The characters are, and bad things are going to happen to people, but you know, it gives you a way to kind of open dialogue and work through those things. And I think that's the, you know, in terms of responsibility, that's our responsibility as artists, is to take society and to show it to people and say, here's what we are and what do we do about it?
It's a mirror. And one thing, yeah, I completely agree. It's a mirror, and artists are the watchdogs of society. I mean, really, mm-hmm. as long as, I would say, you know, when it comes to that kind of stuff, obviously do it responsibly, do your research, because said everyone knows there's a thin line between being titillating and actually just trying to give something a voice to be heard and seen and dealt with, compared to being titillating when it's like, okay, can we not have every female character get raped as a fucking plot device in stories now? Can
I'm on board with that.
Yeah. I mean, that's bullshit. We all know that's bullshit. You know, can we just not use that as a fucking plot device? Compared to going to an art show where there's these kind of photographs that probably they're not trying to glorify anything. It's not a fashion, stupid fashion shoot or anything. I mean, but there are these horrible photographs that are like, you know, this happens. And compared to just fucking Game of Thrones or some shit.
So much rape. So much rape.
Unnecessary violence. So yeah, so it's like it's fun to walk the line, and I know I do some artwork or like some try to explore some ideas that are a little taboo maybe. But I do try to keep in mind those kind of things to just not cross that line. To just try not to cross that line for just you know, titillating the for, you know, for fuck's sake kind of thing.
Yeah, there has to be a purpose to it, right?
A little bit. I mean, everyone likes trash. I do. I mean, like, there's sometimes I just like to draw really horrible grindhousey shit. But the pinks and the
blues and stuff. I like that. You know, your use of color is really cool.
Thanks. Thank you. I do like black and white, but sometimes when I like color, I do like to do the color.
You got that neon feel to it, you know?
I was listening to a lot of like 80s synthy music at the time, so I think that helped.
That makes a lot of sense, actually.
Totally. Fit the vibe, fit the mood.
I can feel it.
So what artists inspire you? What artists do you look at their work and want to emulate or inspire you to do something different or that type of thing?
The shoulders that I happily love to credit, and just you know, like my, you know, every artist has their shoulders of other artists, and I would think for mine, I know a lot of the turn of the century artists that were around in like the turn of the century tens, teens, twenties, like Klimt and Gilles and Stuck, they're Deco-y figurative artists. Like Klimt did the Kiss, that really famous like gold lame kind of painting of a couple kissing. Mm-hmm. Pretty prolific. And I would say like they're very Shields figures are really, really they're extremely expressive and exaggerated and sometimes, and so probably those artists. When it comes to sequential artists, funny thing about me doing comics is I never really read a lot of comics. I mostly just I was never into superhero comics. Most of the time, I just go to the library and see what was on like the graphic novel section and pick up some things here and there. But I never was an avid reader of any particular series. And that's part of, you know, sometimes feel like a total fraud, you know, like, you know, I remember I was maybe a teenager, and, or early 20s, and I was doing it, like, working on an early comic or something, and somebody said something about Jack Kirby, and like, you know, crossing myself over Jack Kirby right now, because now I know who he is, so forgive me, but I was like, oh, I'm not sure who that is, and they're like, it's Jack fucking Kirby, and I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, I don't read Marvel, and then they're like, Marvel, blah, 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 I'm like, oh my god, okay, you know, hang your head in shame, like, wow. Not my finest moment, but, partner James, he's a huge fan of Jaime Hernandez, the Hernandez brothers of the you know, Loco Chicks, the Love and Rockets comics.
Okay.
It has like Hopi and they're very slice of life comics that all involve very Latina characters down in like Southern California, and they're very punky because he grew up during this like punk scene, and my partner can give you a whole dissertation on him. He's fabulous. And he grew up reading Archie, and his figures are just phenomenal. He has this crazy blend of like Archie figures with this punk storyline and these crazy adult characters. So I would say through James showing me these comics, I just instantly connected with how slice of life it was in this alternative world with these alternative characters. So he became definitely kind of something. If I'm having a block, maybe I'll just go read some of his comics to try to get over a hurdle of how to do a scene, or just get in the mood a little bit and see and loosen up and just read some of his stuff.
I think those are good answers.
Yeah, I think that's so. I mean, it sounds so bad. Like, God, if you think about it more, maybe. But oh my God, Tom of Finland. Okay, Tom of Finland. I have to throw his name in there for a second. Mm-hmm. Tom of Finland was. I don't want to misconstrue anything, so let me pull this up. Let's see. Finnish, thank you. Yes, obviously he's Finnish.
Yeah, Tom of Finland was his name, yeah.
There we go. Yeah, okay. Finland, there we go. He was a really prolific, well, I just want to make sure I know when he was around. But he really kind of...
He did a lot of the leather and
yes. He like really gave a shape to all that homoerotic art, and it was really different at the time because it was extremely well done, and it was clearly really cared for, and that it was different than just little smutty smudgy comics, you know, like Tijuana Bibles or something. But he really gave it was also some of the first gay erotic art to actually show, instead of just fucking, it actually has like it's funny. It's very tongue in
cheek. Yeah, there's the funny and there's the seductive nature to it.
It's very playful, exactly. It's very playful, very fun, very consensual. Everyone's always having a fun time, you know, there's kissing, there's just embracing. So he actually kind of really broke down a lot with a lot of that kind of homoerotic art. And so I have his collection. They're just really, really funny to read. But I would definitely say yes, because then, you know, here's another queer artist doing some really, really prolific pornographic work. So to me, that's like right next to my heart where I'm like, yes, porn with heart. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I've noticed some of that influence now that you mention it in your art with the, you know, the black leather, the kind of the biker outfit type thing.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that definitely
one totally classic too, you know, punker for life kind of thing. You know, it's always going to be, you know, the oddballs and leather are always going to be like my crush du jour, really.
Yeah. Well, you know, what speaks to me and, you know, I mean, I'm being not an artist myself. I can tell whenever someone's talented because the people around them are enamored with what they do. So, I mean, like every artist that I know that I work with, it's like, oh my God, Alex's stuff is so fantastic. You know, like John Towers is very reserved in who he gives praise to. And the fact that he likes your stuff as much speaks to me because I know how talented he is, you know?
Oh my God, John. Oh, his stuff is so raw and like his line work, you know, when he does that.
The hatching cross, or what is that called? Cross hatching? Yeah.
Yes. His stuff is so raw and just so, you know, you can feel it right away. It's just very, very like right in your face. You know, when he does his stuff. I mean, the ink work and I absolutely adore his line. He has some really raw, like right in your face stuff. It's fantastic.
Yeah. Good stuff. Jenna, are you getting tired?
Unfortunately, I have to get up super duper early in the morning. So I think I have to bow out at the moment, but it has been fantastic talking to you guys.
Awesome.
Well, oh, same here. It's like, yeah, I get to hear, like, you know,
feel your voice. I know.
It's so awesome. It's like, right on, girl.
Really cool. So if you want to keep chatting, I think.
Well, that's if you're totally leaving, we're all it. Done. No, of course. We'll talk a little more.
Okay, cool.
So Alex is tired of me.
To hearing the rest of this.
That's right. It'll be a surprise.
You have a good night, Jeanette.
Talk to you later.
You too, guys.
Bye.
So yeah, we were talking about John's raw nature and the angles and cross hatching and just the grittiness of it. I mean, and there have definitely been some stories that I've gotten in for Wicked Library and for the Lift. Cindy's was one of them for with the Wicked Library as well as for the Lift. She's had John do some work for her, and it's just that's one of the cool things about working with so many different artists is everybody has kind of their style. And there's certain stories where it's just like, John has to do this one. Alex has to do this one. You know,
that's the best part is like, I'm sure you're like, you're the perfect matchmaker for like what the feel of the story is to like, oh, I have this artist right here that does like, you know, it's the perfect Jeanette story. It's a perfect John story, you know, and that is the cool part to see how the stories match up with the artists you select and what they come up with. That's the best. Yeah. That's fantastic.
So, Cindy, I'm sure you have some questions. You were all excited that we were going to have Alex on.
I'm terrible at questions.
Oh,
you know.
I'm sure you can ask one or two.
I didn't.
Not
prepare.
All really good interviewers, Dan.
Yeah. No, I didn't prepare at all.
Well, see, that's the cool thing about editing. I can make you sound fantastic.
Yes,
I usually do.
Do you have a favorite cover that Alex has done for us?
That shifts.
Yeah.
I like one and then I like another. So yeah, I do. And I just like all your work. I'm kind of a Creeper fan. You don't hear from me a lot, but
it's okay. It makes me happy to know you're always watching.
Creeper
fans are the best fans. I don't need to know you're there. I know you're there.
You know I'm there.
So you guys converged on Objects for Objects because Cindy did the narration and you did the art. And that was a very sexy story, kind of, right?
Objects for Objects. Which one was that?
That's the kind of Queen of Sheba one that you did. It was about the retired porn star and her coming to terms.
Carrie wrote that.
Well, Carrie wrote it. Cindy narrated. Yeah, Cindy narrated it.
Right. Yes. Oh my gosh. Yeah. How cool is that? That you narrated that one. I think that was a good touch. That one was, I remember you and I, Dan, had a little bit of we had to discuss that a bit because I almost felt a little uncomfortable with it at first. And I remember after you said that the ending might possibly be changed, I'm like, well, she's not going to be the quote unquote bad guy now. Right. Or else I'm going to have to not be able to do this picture. I remember that actually.
If you read Carrie's work, like, I mean, he was one of the, he did, actually John did the cover for one of his,
Scaling Triangle.
Yeah. Scaling Love Triangle.
Yep.
And I mean, there's always a very sexual overtone to a lot of what he does. And I think that he uses it kind of in the appropriate way, because I mean, you can very easily rely on the sex part of it as a crutch, but if it's used to kind of explore the darker side of characters, sometimes I think it's interesting. Because it's another one of those things that's very visceral as well.
Yes. I'm a sucker for a good story that has sex elements in it, obviously. I mean, it doesn't even have to be a porn story. But he does like Scaling Love Triangle. When I heard that one, you know, it was just mind blown. That one was so, I mean, like that one was, you know, it was just fucking bizarro land craziness that I adored. I totally adored, you know, like when I'm in the mood to listen to, like, you want some grindhousey, just fucking intense, crazy story to listen to. I mean, that one just hit the nail on the head. It was perfect. I mean, he has some great stuff, and that's why the story, I mean, it was so cool to do the artwork for the one with Mandy. That was her name, right? The character.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that one was good. I just, you know, I remember my qualm with that was just making sure that it didn't just end up being like everything was pointed back at her. Like, this is something you need to fix. The theme of greed in itself, I mean, take away whatever sex the character is, just shown through enough. It's just anything in that story to just be, you know, here's the moral of the story kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, yeah, it was, I mean, that was fantastic. But Scaling Love Triangle was like, that was, I mean, wow, dude, that was one of my favorite ones.
You know, and that was one of the stories that when I started doing the Wicked Library, it was the first story that really made me uncomfortable. Because I'm pretty reserved when it comes to, or used to be pretty reserved when it comes to stories that have, you know, involve sex and that sort of thing. It's like, you know, this is kind of private, but not anymore. And you know, I did that on purpose because I looked this at the story and I was like, this is a great story, but am I going to be comfortable actually doing it?
Right.
And I'm like,
well, I mean, you handled it really well too, because obviously that material, I mean, that's some heavy material.
Yeah.
I mean, that was some pretty intense material there. But I mean, I think you guys did a great job with that. And it was still one of my favorite episodes. One of the ones that I always remember because it's so intense. I mean, it was nice to have some, like, you have these stories that are all in very, very, very intense in their own way. But that one, you know, to have that in the middle somewhere, I mean, that was a wicked tale that was really like, it wasn't a monster in it or anything. It was just crazy, a crazy fucking person. And that's pretty scary. Like,
yeah,
those are the scarier ones, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
More so than the monster. I mean, the monster ones are great. And, you know, I think we all have that very, deep down evolutionary fear of what's in the dark and what kind of furry creatures with fangs are out there.
Absolutely. I still believe in werewolves, so don't even get me started.
There you go.
Totally. But yeah, no, definitely. I mean, who doesn't have a good monster story? And those are terrifying, but, like, you know, when it's just people going crazy, well, shit, that happens every day.
Right.
That's pretty real life.
Right. That could happen tomorrow down the street and bleed into your house. We don't want that. And then you did Paradise Island Waves, which was one of my favorite pieces. I think I showed that to you very early, Cindy, whenever she was sketching that.
Mm-hmm. That was the first one I did, actually. I did that was my first project. Mm-hmm. Because after that, I think I did the Down in the Basement for Nelson's story.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that one was fun.
And, you know, it's funny. We talked earlier about the piece that you did for Trisha. That was my first introduction to you, was that piece. And I was like, wow, that would be great to look at. Victoria would look great in that style.
Right.
and then I got into all the other stuff and I'm like, wow, there's a lot more here. This is a good fit for the Wicked Library. I think that there began our collaboration in earnest. And
definitely. And that piece was from the heart too. There was a lot of care in there because, you know, Trisha, you know, that midget queen, love her so much. She's fantastic. You know, that story's great. So, but I can definitely say, I can sink into it. I can do a faux style when I really want to of something, at least kind of chameleon it enough to get across what kind of style, like, it should be. And, you know, that was very, like, Burton-esque and just going off of her own drawings. Anyway, it was Burton-esque, and forgive me, I can't remember the guy's name who created Zim and Johnny the Homicidal Maniac, but that artist, he's fantastic. I mean, he's great. You know, so it was a nice blend of that. So I'm like, okay. So I drew my versions of the characters that way. And so, I mean, I do try to do that a bit for certain projects when I think something could fit the feel better, like the header for the Wicked Library. I was trying to go for that classic old school.
Oh, I love it. I look at it every day, and every day I'm like, that's fucking awesome.
It was a blast to do. It was very, very fun for me to do. It was blast. I all I had on at the time, it was at Serhii's recommendations. I was watching. I was getting in all these Italian horror movies I'd never seen. So I was watching Fulci and Argento, and I was watching all these movies. Like, while that was playing, I was watching House by the Cemetery, and
oh, that's Suspiria, awesome,
and Inferno, and it was a really fun couple days. Yeah. It's a really fun couple days.
Yeah, and you know, it's I like that piece because it's one of those pieces where when you look at it the first time, you don't see everything. And as you continue to look at it, you're like, oh, look, there's a spider there. And oh, look, there's somebody holding a candle over there. And it's just like, you know, you get the first image and then just layers upon layers as you look at it again and again. And I felt we really needed something that featured the librarian because he's kind of been, you know, in the background. We started out the season with an image of him. And right.
Agreed. I mean, he's your Wicked Library guy, and then Victoria's the Lift Girl, you know. So you kind of need to solidify that character with your with you know, the Wicked Library. So totally.
Yeah, and I couldn't be happier with the way that it turned out. It was awesome, awesome.
It was fun. It was a fun thing to do. It was really fun. Also, just thinking about all the creepy crawlies, and I'm like, ooh, I don't do horror artwork that much, so what can I put in here? Do Cthulhu arms and a spider. And so it was fun. It was a really fun little project to do. And then trying to color it, I was actually, the colors are just pulled in from, I found pretty good scans of old Tales from the Crypt comic books, and mm-hmm. I just pulled colors right from the old Tales from the Crypt comic books to color it.
Yeah, that palette, that EC yeah. Comics palette, that's totally. So cool.
Yes.
That's awesome. What other projects do you have going on? We've talked a lot about the stuff that you've done for us because I'm familiar with it, but
I'm looking forward to more too, by the way. So let's just say that right now. Okay. So Jeanette, get on it. Okay. Cause I want that fucking story on my desk. Like, I'm so ready for that one. Project wise right now, I know my partner, James, he actually has been having a lot of fun doing his own artwork because he's a writer first, but then he lately has been doing his own artwork for his character Ezra, who's available on our site too if you want to read it. Most of the comics up, and he's been doing that. So seeing him do that and doing a page every week has been amazing. So he's kind of working on that. Currently, project wise, after I assembled my latest porn collection, Little Black Book 2, in May, I've just been kind of doing spot projects here and there, like, you know, things for you guys and things for other, like in town here, some, artworks, for collaborations with some of our local comic buddies that we know. Usually in these kind of weird impasse areas, I'm kind of incubating or thinking about what next, something I'm going to start. There's always time for sexy artwork. You know, if I'm in the mood, some nights just 2 hours, like, yeah, I want to draw a sexy picture. So I'll just do that for 2 hours. And then there's one, you know, picture is totally done. Right now I think I'm just at an impasse. I had a story idea brewing for maybe another comic that I want to try my hand at. So I think I'm just going to be writing that up for a bit and get some, and then I can actually start maybe doing some artwork for it and just do like a little idea for like a 12-page comic that I kind of want to try. So
cool.
But at the moment that's about it. Always time for sexy artwork or just random, you know, like figure or you see on like Facebook, just one-off mm-hmm. sketches or just sketches or artwork. So as long as I'm doing something like that, I feel pretty good. Starting on a movie, doing a sketch of something. But I think right now I'm going to focus my efforts on just doing a comic because I actually haven't done a sequential piece since about April. It was the final comic in Little Black Book 2 is the porn comic, the finishing piece. And so I kind of miss it. So I think I'm going to get back to doing that.
Yeah. It's nice to have that variety. I mean, it's one of the nice things about taking a break from doing the Wicked Library and taking a break from doing the Lift for me is, you know, I get to the point where I'm itching to get back to doing it.
Yes,
I mean, it's nice to work on some other things that have fallen behind as well, but you know, you get to that point where you're just like, I miss doing that. I want to get back to doing that. So
it's good. Absence makes the heart grow, you know, fonder.
Yes.
I would say, you know, everyone, like everything, it's a relationship. You need a break from certain things. You know, if you've got no writer's block or artist block or for God's sakes, the days you can't just draw a goddamn fucking eye to save your life, you know, like some of those days, I'm just like done. You just walk, you know, I'm just like my hand to God, I am done. If I had to draw an eye right now with a gun to my head, just shoot me. I can't. But it's you know, I think every creator goes through those periods where it's like incubation. You're sorting stories out. You're sorting ideas out in your head, and then all of a sudden, once you just things are brewing in the background you don't know about, and it's almost like a sexy little game because if you start thinking about it, I'm like, hey, what you got going on back there, guys? They're just like, stop it, you know, nothing yet. You gotta wait, and you're like, oh, okay, and then you're trying to guess, like, is it this story? No, and then finally one day, you know, they just come in wearing, you know, hosiery and just want to take you to town. And you're like, yes, I finally figured it out. This is where all this has been going for months.
So you get those moments at 3 a.m. in the morning where it's just like, oh my God, I have to go and write this now.
I would say those happen to me usually when I'm doing like the goddamn dishes or taking a shower or something. You know, like everyone has those, right? It's when you're not thinking about it. And then all of a sudden it's just like, here's the thing you've been trying to think of forever. And then, you know, just drop what you're doing. At least jot down the two ideas. Yeah, I've written a whole fucking novel in the shower before. But of course, when I get out, it's like I write down that one sentence that stuck in my head. And that's about it.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah,
that's the hardest part. I mean, for me, it's always terrifying whenever I have that idea. I'm like, oh, my God, I'm going to lose this if I don't write it right now.
Yes. You know, the sense of urgency sometimes. And then there's sometimes when you're like, I really should have had a sense of urgency about that. Cause now I can't fucking remember what I was thinking.
Right.
About.
Exactly. Right. That's funny. Well, where can folks find your stuff? Where are the best places online or in social media to connect with you and find your work?
I can say, we have the gamut, you know, Crazed Pixel. So just Crazed Pixel, one word, Crazed Pixel Comics has a Twitter. I am on Facebook myself. So, hey, if you want to stop by and say hi, Crazed Pixel Comics is on Facebook as well. We have pages, but I'd say the biggest sites, if you would like to look at the artwork, crazedpixel.com, mm-hmm. that has all of our comics available and some previews of certain things that we only sell, but we have some previews up. So there's the standard website you can view our comics. I have my Tumblr, which is very X-rated. So 18 plus, please, if you'd like to go there. So that is just alexjmurd.tumblr.com. And so I would say Facebook, our website, and my Tumblr for my artwork, or the nice clean cut. There's the artwork if you just want to go enjoy it pages.
Awesome.
You're doing quite a few conventions too coming up, right?
Yes, thank you. This year's our first year. We've done 8. Last year we did 7. This year we've done 8, which is we're pretty stoked about it. It's been fun. And so we still have we still have 4 left for the year that we're going to be doing.
Are they all there in Portland?
In the Portland area. One is in Seattle. Mm-hmm.
And when I'm not there.
Go fucking figure, right?
Dang it!
the one in Seattle in a couple weeks. And then we have one in Tacoma, or 2 in Tacoma, and coming up at different parts of the year. And then we have the big Comic-Con in Portland is the Rose City Comic-Con. Mm-hmm. And that's just a fun thing to go to just have a table at, just to be there and just have fun with. I mean, we have such kind of small niche kind of artworks. We don't expect to sell really much at those shows. We just really like to go to see our friends and have a good time and just mm-hmm. enjoy the crowd. And so that's the big, like, Marvel DC, you know, Comic-Con here. And it's always a blast. It's always so fun. But yeah, we've been rambling a lot lately. It's pretty crazy. I'm kind of looking forward to December when everything can just kind of chill out for
slows down a little bit. Yeah,
just a little bit. I like things a little bit crazy. It's always gonna be a little crazy.
Yeah, be bored every once in a while.
Yeah, totally.
Well, did you have any final questions there, Cindy?
Oh, I think I'm good.
Okay. Well, we've kept you on the phone for a long, long time, so I really appreciate. Well, Skype, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Back in the old days when we used actual phones, right. when you used your cell phone for something else, when you knew you can actually still make phone calls with a cell phone.
You know what?
It's the weirdest thing.
Funny story about that. I still have an old brick of a silver Nokia.
Oh, yeah?
That only makes calls and does text. So when people try to send me group texts, I'm like, ha-ha, motherfucker, I can't see that. But AT&T are finally... by the end of this year, they're going to drop that kind of that 2. I think it's still a 2G network. And so I'm kind of like have to at least just upgrade the phone. So I am kind of excited, but also it's like I'm still like when it comes to technology in the group, it's just like, oh, for God's sakes, Alex, just go back to 1984. Like, well, damn it. Like, once you
it
get
does what it, I need it to do.
My boss is just like texting me like, you just bloop, 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 bloop. And I'm like, hold the fuck on. I can't. I'm still...
type me. My phone has actual keys that you press in.
Exactly. I can do it. That's going to be the thing I miss. I do not have styluses for fingers. I have very, these are working man hands, okay? I have very like stout, earthy fingers that it's just, I'm not delicate. So it's like the touchscreen thing. And some people have these beautiful fingers that just shoop, 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 shoop. And I'm like, oh my fuck, that's going to take me forever to like, I'm going to be that person like jamming their finger in their phone.
Yeah. Oh, have hope. I have man hands.
I am having hope. It's like, you know, it's like I'm going to try my hardest, but
I am clumsy and my hands are big.
Yeah. Totally.
I can do it.
Not a delicate flower. Yeah.
No.
My fingers are very long and fine and sophisticated.
Very fine and elegant. Finesse.
Man hands as well. All right. Well, I do appreciate you taking so much time. We're going to talk to you again on Dangling After Dark next week. Yes, so the saga continues.
The saga will continue. And I'll make sure to have a couple of drinks beforehand because shit's going to get crazy. That'll be a blast. So.
I think so.
It's like a 2-drink minimum, okay?
That's right. At least.
So thanks for having me. It was super fun. You guys are totally a blast. And I guess all I have to say is I look forward to doing some more artwork for everybody.
Hi, this is Dick Dangle. If you enjoyed this interview with Alex Murd, head over to danglingafterdark.com, episode 109, and hear what she had to say on my show.